Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app.
Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. We're back for part two of the discussion of the Ravens offense in that big win over the Steelers. Part one, if you didn't listen to us, Kadir Ishwael was with us. He will not be for part two. He had lots of things to do to prepare for Christmas, but some great stuff from Kadir in that first episode. A lot of review of Lamar, how Lamar and Bateman might not have been on the same page on the interception, and how each of them might have been looked at. And we heard a lot about 25 years ago, some individual plays that Kadir made against the Steelers in the big win there in 1999. That was kind of at the very dawn of the Ravens dynasty. So that was an interesting one. Some of the strange characters from that team, including his road roommate, talking a bit about him. He gave us a little bit of a breakdown on what it means for a receiver to stack a cornerback. Something we probably all have heard the term. A lot of people do obviously know exactly what it means, but it was kind of an interesting discussion there. So some great stuff from Kadir Ishwael talking about Derrick Henry and whatnot. So we'll go into part two here. We'll talk about a few more things. It'll just be me doing this solo though. All right. So we talked a little bit in the first part about the running back snap division, but the Ravens also used a fairly heavy alignment in this game, at least fairly heavy for the available personnel. So when they had Charlie Kolar, they had a third tight end, and they were getting up close to 2.00 tight ends plus fullbacks plus OL6 per play. And that's two of your five eligible receivers then assigned to these heavier positions. So when I talk about the Ravens playing very heavy in the 2022 season, the last Greg Roman, season, for example, they were up north of 2.3 per play in that. Which is just, it's insanely heavy. The typical NFL team would be a little bit lower than 150. The Ravens at 176 in this game, up from 171 against the Giants, 152 against the Eagles, but still about average for the Ravens. And they really do clearly miss Charlie Kolar and are asking some people to do jobs that are just a little bit different. We're really seeing this on both sides of the ball. So when Michael Pierce was out, it meant Broderick Washington had to step in at nose tackle. Well, on the offensive side, the similar thing is that Mark Andrews has to step in as an inline tight end and do more of that. And Isaiah Likely has to throw more blocks tight to the line of scrimmage than he might otherwise do. Likely, I think he's become a very fine blocker, but his kind of bread and butter is going out in space and hitting a guy in level two or three and forklifting him. Much more difficult for him to get an edge defender or even a bigger man who may be uncovered and the line of scrimmage and making a block there. Not that he can't do it. It's not his bailiwick. Andrews, same thing, good blocker, but a better blocker in level two and level three players where he has that advantage of generally being the larger man. Anyway, to look at that tight end play, Andrews played 76% of the snaps, had six targets for 37 yards. Two really big catches to begin and end the drive that helped put the game away. He caught a 16-yard pass crossing to begin that drive, and he caught a 7-yard touchdown. It's just a very nice throw between two defenders. He knew exactly the spot he needed to move to. Lamar saw it, and after all these years of working together, it was a pretty easy pitch and catch. Lamar had the three touchdown passes he had in the game. The pass on the left side to Bateman was just a wonderful touch pass in terms of getting that home. Very similar kind of to the pass against the Giants. In fact, he had a couple of passes, one to Bateman and one to Walker, that were tremendous touch passes that basically were toe taps in bounds. And there was, in the case of the Bateman touchdown, there was a defender that was in play. Very similar Bateman touchdown in this game. And then the pass on the right side to Isaiah Likely was a misdirection play where they really confused the Steelers. They showed run. They showed other run concepts in terms of how they were aligned. And then Isaiah Likely snuck out, often like you see a fullback sneak out into that right flat, and there was just nobody near him. And Lamar hit him right there for one of the easiest touchdowns you'll ever see. That's a good play to look at post-snap emotion. And you really saw a lot of frustration on the part of Minkah Fitzpatrick there, who kind of got caught in no man's land, looking around at who else was supposed to cover on that play, kind of looked at Patrick Queen like he had a responsibility there that wouldn't be unknown to us as Ravens fans, that Patrick Queen might not have been in the right place. I'm not sure he was actually the guy to be there. It just was a frustration that all the Steelers kind of guessed wrong simultaneously on that play, given some of the other misdirection components. Let's see, he had four OL6 snaps late in the game. It was they used a seven-man line twice with combination of Cleveland and Jones coming in. They used a fair amount of unbalanced in this game as well. I don't always talk about that in the offensive line segment, which we'll get to in a moment, but this was a good amount of unbalanced that they were trying to give the Steelers different looks. And it's obviously a game that the Ravens continually fight to try and present something new to an opponent that knows them very well. So kind of a difficult challenge coming on a short week, wanting to install some things that are going to be new in terms of the look versus Pittsburgh. And they'll have what should be a pretty big advantage getting back for that Cleveland game, in having extra time to show Cleveland things they've never seen. Now, Cleveland's not... they're not entirely the same team that they've been all year. They're missing some players and whatnot, but definitely still a team where you need to respect them as an NFL team, and you want to make sure that you show them enough in terms of different looks that you're still confusing them and not just trying to overpower them. The Ravens are a good football team, but they can't just play power even against a pretty mediocre football team like the Browns and expect to win with it necessarily. Give themselves the best chance. They also have to provide some deception in the game. Now, I mentioned in the first part of the show that the Steelers averaged 5.17 pass rushers per play. That is an unbelievable number. You never really see five, but they blitzed two-thirds of the time. They thought perhaps because of the condition of their secondary, and as we know, they were without Joey Porter Jr. for most of the game. Dante Jackson was injured going in, so they didn't have a lot with Cam Sutton and Trice out there. They didn't really have a lot of talent left at cornerback, and they really felt like they had to win the game with their pass rush. I think they're probably right about that. And the Ravens offensive line did a very good job picking up and providing a decent opportunity set for Lamar, particularly given the fact that the Steelers had committed so much to the rush. So let's think about that specifically here. If you rush five, okay, let's start with four. If you rush four and you provide ample time and space, you have a three-second pocket, but the defense also has held something back in reserve. They have seven in the secondary trying to cover whoever you send out, and they're going to have a reasonably better set of outcomes on the typical ATS throw when they have seven defenders back. Now, when you rush five, as the Steelers did more than that on average, and they did that eight times in the game, you're actually going to handicap your secondary by having one less player back there. So the value of an ATS throw is magnified under those circumstances. I know it seems obvious. It's something worth discussing. I have a lot of you listeners who really understand this and have commented about me to it. And I appreciate that. And I feel all the more need to make the comment when it comes up. But Lamar had a great game throwing against the five-man rush in this game. Some of that's due to the offensive line getting it blocked up fairly well. And some of it is due to the fact that Lamar knew how to take advantage of a secondary where there were only six back there. And he knew where to look and where to go with the football. So really good game for Lamar. And Lamar out was about 50 yards better, might have been 54. Let me look for a second here really quickly. Yeah, Lamar outperformed his opportunity set by 54 yards on the game. Now, one of the things about the 5.17 pass rushers is that that also requires the Ravens to put in more of their eligible receiver assets as blockers. And they used a lot in this game, 15 set blockers. Those are guys who stay in to block, they don't chip and then secondarily go out in a pattern. They did also use 12 chip blockers. So that's 27 total eligible receivers used in some capacity to pass block on only 23 plays, or 1.13 per play. That's more than 22%, almost 23% of their total eligible receivers used to block is another way to look at that. Season high for the Ravens, very necessary for what the Steelers sent at them. It was not simply a game where they chipped edges. They did give Rosengarten a lot of help in this game. We're going to get to that a little bit later. But they also had to use set blockers in the middle to handle some of the red and green dogging that the inside linebackers are doing. Okay, I'll explain that again. Red dog, a blitz coming, generally speaking, from off ball. It's already planned on a pre-snap basis. Green dog means that linebacker may come on a blitz, but he'll typically come after he waits to see if the running back's going out for a pass. And if he sees an eligible receiver, the one he's responsible for is in there blocking, then it's his job all of a sudden to rush the quarterback at that moment. And they use some of both of that to some effect. But generally speaking, the opportunity set Lamar got was pretty darn good for what the Steelers threw at the Ravens in terms of numbers. We of course had Johnson has been released, but Wallace had 25 snaps. Walker had 9, and Anthony Miller got a snap. Anthony Miller, by the way, that was his first snap since 2021, when he had 12 targets for Houston and Pittsburgh over 3 games. So he's 30 years old, making his return to the NFL. I'm sure this was a big moment for him to get back on an NFL field. He may have a spot in Wednesday's game. First of all, the Ravens aren't, I don't think, going to bring in anybody new. I don't think that, you know, Keith Kirkwood or Dayton Wade or anybody else will necessarily be elevated for the game, even though the Ravens have both roster spot and practice squad elevations they could use. But I think they might stay with Miller. And the reason is that he probably provides you as much NFL experience as a wide receiver as you have, but he also could be used in some kick return and punt return situations. And if you look at the last 2 weeks, we had Desmond King fumble 2 punts this week. We had Tylan Wallace mishandle the ball a couple times the week before. Harbaugh does not suffer fumbles easily. So I think there's a pretty good chance we'll see somebody new returning punts on Wednesday. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if that was Anthony Miller. Could also be Dayton Wade, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was Anthony Miller. Both those guys had return experience in camp and look like they might be reasonable candidates for the job. I like to look at ADOT for some of the players. One of the big indicators for if the Ravens scheme kind of meets their personnel and whatnot is to see Flowers with a high ADOT. That's not like Zay Flowers can't be useful running an occasional wide receiver screen or jet toss. Those plays have value, and I don't want to completely take them out as a threat. Orbit motion and whatnot may be done to get him a ball in his hands behind the line of scrimmage. But I think he's most useful when he can impact the play and direction of the safety on a play. So you want to get him down the field, want to get him impacting at least one or the only one safety as he makes his move. And a lot of game planning for the offense is in how to use Zay as a decoy and attempt to flood zones, make a single defender who's trying to kind of play either of two options, make him make the wrong choice. And Zay Flowers is a wonderful weapon for that. And he caught 5 balls in this game, was targeted 8 times. Nothing wrong with his individual performance as a receiver, but he's that much more valuable to the Ravens when he can be used for the misdirection and the forced bad choices that he brings to the opposing safety group. So anyway, ADOT of 12 for Flowers in this game is good. Nice to see him getting mostly downfield opportunities. Very similar, by the way, second half of this year, second half of last year, both much higher ADOT numbers for Flowers. In the first part of the season, he's used much more on both years as a gadget guy. And the Ravens, I think, really need to fill that role. We've talked about it a little bit. They could have some good news coming back with Keaton Mitchell probably playing a few snaps in this game against the Texans. Harbaugh says he'll be good to go. Now, that I'm not trying to read between any lines, but the Ravens would actually have to be making a move if Keaton Mitchell was not ready to go, because they're down to no Justice Hill available on Wednesday. So we presume, the concussion, he almost certainly will not clear the protocol by then. Hopefully he'll be back for the last game of the season in the playoffs, but they'll have Derrick Henry. They won't want to overuse him in a game like this. They will lean on him, I'm sure, for 60, 65% of snaps. And then they have Rasheen Ali, who I think will be the second running back, if I had to guess. And he may get 5 or 6 carries in this game, or he may get 3 and just be more of a guy that they use as a decoy, have in on some passing downs, try and get what they can out of him as a pass blocker. But it's Derrick Henry who's in more when the Ravens are on schedule with the sticks. So meaning they're either in first down, or they're in, second and we'll call it 5 or less, or they're in 3rd and 2 or less. Then you see a lot of Derrick Henry. Otherwise, we'll be seeing Rasheen Ali on the field for some. And we'll probably see Keaton Mitchell in the backfield at least once, I think. Cadre and I each set an over-under. I set it at 4 snaps. Cadre says 11 snaps for an over-under. We'll see how that plays out. And if Mitchell may actually have a bigger role in this game. I think if my most likely expectation is that we'll see Keaton Mitchell not in the backfield as often, but we'll see him more as a misdirection player lined up in the slot, crossing the formation, throwing that one extra wrinkle at the defense to make them make some bad decisions. And he probably gets a jet toss or a handoff in such plays. I think I'm going to be surprised if Keaton Mitchell doesn't get his first touch of the season versus the Houston Texans coming up. He did get one that was reversed by penalty earlier this year, so he's still technically had no touches that counted. The Ravens had a great game of missed tackles forced, and that included both the receivers and and Derrick Henry primarily, who had a bunch of missed tackles. They were 1 of 3 on contested catches and had 1 drop in the game. The contested catch was Andrews. The drop was Flowers. On a ball where he had the corner outpaced, moving from right to left. Yes, moving from right to left, just did not hold on to the ball, which is unfortunate. And he left a few yards on the field on that one. But generally, a good game for the Ravens receivers. Flowers made one of the really great plays of the game a little later, tracking the ball extremely well over his shoulder, and then taking that defender for a ride, eventually leaving him with not even his shoe as he pulled his leg out. And the Steelers defense was extremely slow to get to the spot and take him down. He probably got an extra 10 to 15 yards out of that on that play alone. So in terms of the scheme and the receivers and whatnot, we'll talk about some individual players a little bit later as well. But a good game for that group, and a good game formationally in terms of what the Ravens were trying to accomplish. I think we really got to look at this as a great set of scripted plays too from Todd Monken in this game. So Lamar had a fine game, wasn't up to maybe his usual standard for the year, wasn't much below it. I got to the end of it, I was surprised he had 115.4 passer rating, but we're kind of taking for granted the notion that Lamar is supposed to do better than 3 touchdowns and 1 interception in a game, or are they supposed to do better than throwing for 9 yards per throw he gets off? And he had 23 for 207, so 9 yards exactly per throw. We've taken so much of Lamar for granted that when he does have a quote-unquote bad game, it's still pretty damn good, and that's what I think we got out from Lamar out of this one. If you watch Josh Allen's game against New England, dramatically less impressive in terms of really any way you'd want to break it down. So we've seen the MVP odds have changed a little bit. Don't really care about it that much, but know a lot of you do, and we'll just mention it that much. Okay, let's move on and talk about the offensive line a little bit. And I'll go through this, not having a foil here to talk about it with me is always a little bit challenging, but I'll get through this as quickly as I can. We'll start with Ronnie Stanley. Ronnie had an okay game, and the offensive line as a whole, maybe we macro level this first, provided Lamar with a very solid opportunity set given the number of rushers. So seven ATS, seven or 10 BOQs, and seven pressures. First of all, only seven pressures and 24 pass attempts against the Steelers when they're rushing this many. That was really good. And so Lamar, you know, had an opportunity to throw some balls down the field. And everybody, you know, contributed at least at an average level in this game. And a couple of players were significantly above that. Ronnie Stanley, 59 plays. He had 50 blocks. He missed five blocks during the game. He allowed a penetration on a run play. So it was completely his fault, allowing a single penetration. I got to go back and see where that was. Yeah, it was on the second drive of the game on first and six. They lost 3 yards, and he was shed by Cam Hayward getting into the backfield, who really made the play. So that set up the second and nine. Of course, they got the touchdown to Likely on that play. So didn't hurt the Ravens, but it was a not a great block by Stanley in that case. He allowed two pressures, had some trouble on the left side, more trouble than I usually associate with Stanley, staying in front and mirroring with primarily Highsmith. And that was a frustration there, because Stanley is the ultimate give ground in order to mirror guy. And he was not able to do that successfully versus Highsmith, who's a very talented and overshadowed pass rusher. He's TJ Watt is a great player on the other side. A lot of people think TJ Watt drives everything in terms of the pass rush. I think TJ Watt gains as much benefit from having Highsmith opposite him, and they both gain a tremendous benefit from having Cam Hayward on the inside. So when Highsmith's on an island, he's a very dangerous rusher. He beat Stanley outside for the one sack. It's a minus six all to Stanley there. Sometimes those are spread out. That was not the case this time. So 38 points for Stanley. Gave him a decent size adjustment, which got him up to a C for the game. He did have some nice mobility with five blocks in level two. Didn't have a pancake, didn't pull. He did have one highlight, which is about what I expect. So some of his level two blocks, he's still very decisive, knows what he's doing going to level two. And it's been a pleasure watching him play with this increased mobility again in 2024, because it's a lot better than he was. So a C for the game for Stanley. Nothing to be ashamed of. As you know, I'm a fairly... a harsh grader, and a C would probably be league average play at any position, but at left tackle, you're happy to get that. And I'd say you're very happy to get that against the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I think if anything, my system kind of undercorrects for the quality of the opposition. I only allow to give up to 10 points maximum back for the subjective adjustments, which includes quality of the competition. The other thing about Stanley that was really a valuable play, which improved his adjusted score here, was the fumble recovery. Now, he allowed the sack, which was bad, but he also fell on that fumble, which mitigated a significant component of the damage from that play. So nice to see him be able to do that. Move to left guard, where Patrick McCary is playing again now. A number of consecutive starts there. Maybe it's 12. Seems about right. I think it's 15 games. The first three were Voorhees. So 59 plays, 50 blocks. He missed seven, had two pressures allowed, and he's facing Cam Hayward. That's a really tough opponent that he's in there facing. So I gave him a pretty substantial adjustment. I believe he was responsible for the false start and not Stanley. It looks that way to me. It also looks like PFF has it scored that way. So I charged him with a false start. Now, false starts are only minus two, so it's not the end of the world in terms of a scoring, but it did hold down a score a little bit. And if I find that's different, I'll change the scores out on the website in the article. 44 points on the game in 59 plays is 0.75 per play. With adjustment, he gets up to a C at guard. So it's a solid game, but not spectacular, but a solid game. Some of the things he did on an ancillary basis were better. He had three blocks in level two, two pancakes, made four out of four pulls, and had two highlights, both highlight combination blocks. So nice of him to do that. If you want more detail on the play and exactly what plays he was charged for pressures or what Stanley was done, there's more detail on that on the offensive line article, which will be posted on the website probably either late on Tuesday or even on Christmas morning. So we'll see when I'm able to get that put together. All right, moving over to Linderbaum. Linderbaum has not been playing great football over the last few weeks, I'll say. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to give you his kind of grades as he's gone through. He's not been terrible or anything. He's just not playing at the level we'd hope to have. A nice streak in the middle of the season against Denver, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh, where he had B, A minus, B minus, and he had some good scores, a couple A's earlier in the season. Was probably on track for just a little short of Pro Bowl level play up through that week 11. And the last 4 weeks, he's gotten a C minus, a D plus, a C minus, and another C in this game. Where did he fall down in this game? Well, he had 59 plays, 51 blocks, 6 missed, half a pressure, and then the offensive holding penalty is a 5-point subtraction. So that's really the big play. You can't hide your penalties under my system. Penalties are very significant, and post-snap penalties, or maybe more accurately, declinable penalties, are very serious fouls because they allow the defense to say, oh, I have a choice of A or B. I'll take B then. I'll just decline the penalty. And in fact, that's what they did in this game. So they had a choice between a third and 11 or a second and 21, and they decided to take the third and 11, which put the Ravens in a bad spot. So anyway, not ideal for Linderbaum. His play is at, even in a game like this, was at a league average level, but I'm going to say that's not what the Ravens need from Tyler Linderbaum. He's a first round draft pick, which is some cost at this point, but he also is going to be a guy they're going to have to decide whether they want to pay a lot of money to keep. And 2024 has been a mild regression year, particularly in terms of pass blocking for Linderbaum. It's not super surprising that would happen. He had a great year as a pass blocker last year after having a pretty terrible pass blocking year as a rookie. Not uncommon, and not really uncommon that a man of his size is going to have problems in pass blocking. Also, some of it is the players playing next to him. So, having Powers there was a solid situation for him. He said, I think he might have done better had he had Cleveland on one side and Fa'alele on the other. Even though that's some questionable pass blocking talent there, the good size might have made it even better for him to do his job. And a mix of body types is usually a very good way to break down the interior of a defensive line and tee up those combination blocks, get to level 2, and let Linderbaum work his magic that way. By the way, Tyler had a great game in level 2, 10 blocks in level 2 in this game, 2 pancakes and 2 highlights. And if I recall, he had one block where he had 2 blocks in level 2. Yep. Now I've got him for 2 combination blocks here, starting with Montrevious Adams. So I'm thinking of somebody else who had a pair of blocks in level 2. It's actually Daniel Fa'alele, of all people, had 2 blocks in level 2 on the same play. So we'll get to him in just a moment. But anyway, decent game for Linderbaum. But so far, we're going the left side. We got 3 C's involved here. I don't want to minimize the complexity or the difficulty of what was going on here. Obviously, Highsmith and Hayward are both on the opposing the left side of the Ravens defensive line. That's a complicated couple of players to deal with. And the Ravens did a solid job, not only dealing with them, but dealing with a lot of the blitz pickups that were necessary, given how many numbers the Steelers sent at the Ravens. So a good game for Linderbaum, not a great one. Move on to Fa'alele. Now he had a game that is fairly characteristic of his season as a whole here in the sense of how it looked. So we're looking at Daniel Fa'alele. We see a big, frankly, oafish looking guy walking around on a football field. But this was a game where I thought the results were greater than the look. And he had a couple of these earlier in the year. The first game against Kansas City, I thought he played a lot better than he looked. I thought he played better in the Washington game where he had a really nice pass blocking game. And he's been on a very long rut of not good play, but I thought his play against the Steelers was actually pretty darn good. And I know that not everybody's going to agree with me on that, and that's fine. But here's how I scored it. I had 59 plays, 51 blocks, 7 missed, allowed 1/2 a pressure that was shared with Linderbaum. That was his only negative event of the game. So he didn't get penalized. He didn't have any other pass blocking mistakes. You could do very well in terms of scoring if most of your missed blocks come on run plays or in level two when you move out and can't quite figure out what to do. It looks bad. It looks like you can't move or decide or whatever. But honestly, the pass blocking's far more important. So Fa'alele had a very good game from that standpoint. 50 points, 0.85 per play. With adjustment, he gets to a B. Actually, with or without adjustment, he would have been a B in this game. So very solid one. He had 4 level 2 blocks, 2 pancakes, pulled 3 out of 5 times successfully. So he missed a couple pulls, and he had 2 highlights. The one highlight I wanted to talk about was the play where he had 2 blocks in level 2 on a 16-yard pass play. I believe this one might have gone to Henry. It was on the 1st-and-10 play. On the Andrews drive, started with an Andrews PL-16, finished with an Andrews PM-7 for the touchdown. But in the middle there, I think I have the play correct, was a little screen pass out there to Henry where he was in level 2. He blocked number 42, who's a safety, and number 23, that's KZ, who's also a safety. And he was well down the field to do it to help facilitate that play. Not an easy pairing for a man his size. He really is trying hard to get downfield, but this breaks quite a long slump for him. Since week 7, his grades, I'll get it to you that way. I think that's the easiest way to reflect this, are an F against Tampa Bay, D against Cleveland, C against Denver, D against Cincinnati, D against Pittsburgh, C- against the Los Angeles Chargers, a D against Philadelphia, and a D against the Giants. And now pops up to a B against Pittsburgh. One of the underrated good efforts in this ball game. So anyway, positive on Daniel Fa'alele coming out of this. And then we go all the way to the right. Roger Rosengarten had an outstanding game facing TJ Watt with a lot of help. He definitely had a lot of chip blocking help, a lot of extra assigned players. And there's also a value in having traffic to the outside of Watt where you have an extra blocker to pick that up, because that limits the amount of space that Watt has to work with. And he did a very good job handling that. There were plays where, for instance, Andrews, or likely, I believe, one time, blocked Watt, and they were never even really got off that block. They just continued to block him before releasing very late. Rosengarten never even really had a block. So that's fine when that happens. He scores his point on such plays. But he did benefit from the help over that, yet I wouldn't minimize in any way how well he played in this game. 59 plays, 53 blocks. He missed 5. He had 1 pressure allowed, so that's terrific. Let me just make sure that was to Watt even.
Save big this holiday season. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
He gave it up. Beaten inside, actually, by 95 on the 3rd-and-19 play for pressure on the very first drive. So that took the Ravens off the field, but that was the only pressure he allowed the whole game. So 0 to Watt in this game. He had 4 level 2 blocks. He had 1 pancake, 3 out of 6 pulls made. So the pulls were where he missed 3 out of 5 blocks. I thought the Ravens used him very creatively, particularly in the scripted plays, to do some things you do not normally see. He had a 1-gap pull on one of the Ravens' first plays from scrimmage where Henry got a decent gain. So that was nice. and they used him in level two effectively. They were not afraid to use him in some ways that you might not always use a rookie lineman. This, to me, in these last couple of weeks, have been a big step forward for Rosengarten in terms of how we view him for 2025. So he scored an A against the Giants. The Giants, if they have anything, they have edge rushers. That was a pretty good game. Did not quite score as well, but scored very well against Pittsburgh in the low A range, actually the mid A range at tackle, 93, you know, after adjustment. Very happy with that performance. And I think you got to really start asking the question of, is Roger Rosengarten maybe ready to play left tackle in 2025? I think the answer still might be, from the most prudent man method, that might be the not the optimal situation. But if the Ravens get into a situation where they can't re-sign Ronnie Stanley and they're drafting a new tackle, which I think they will do anyway, and they have McCary and Josh Jones both leave the team, which also may happen. Jones, McCary, and Stanley are all free agents. Then I think you might be in a situation where Rosengarten is the natural successor at left tackle and the most likely to succeed successor. And I wouldn't rule it out. Now, three A's in the last four games for Rodgers. So he's on a good streak here. He had a kind of a down point at midseason, and he's looking up again. His overall rating for the season probably be in the low B range, maybe a B minus now for the season, bordering on a B. And, you know, I'm very happy, obviously, with his level of play to this point. So anyway, that was Rosengarten. We did see two snaps each from Jones and Cleveland. Jones made one out of two blocks. Cleveland made a both in a very brief appearance as OL6 and OL7, respectively. Love that they brought in those formations at the end of the game. They got one neutral zone infraction on them, but they brought in those on among three of them, actually. That didn't count as a scored snap, as you can probably guess. But the other two, they had them flanked on the end, and the Steelers' defense looked completely gassed at the time. And it's really nice to step on their throats late in a game like that. Run the ball effectively, even as you're running out the clock. And they did that very much in this game, I thought. So a good 6 minute run the clock out drive between 9 and 3 minutes based in the game, where the Steelers made a what I would call an ill-advised punt on 4th and 11, 4th and 12, whatever it was, from midfield. You got to go for that with 9 minutes left. It just doesn't make any sense to punt that football. But Tomlin did decide to punt the ball away, and the Ravens, no field for them was too long on offense in this game. They turned around starting field position at the 4-yard line for a touchdown earlier in the game with a fumble by Wilson. And then they ended up starting, I think, what was on the 8 or 11 yard line. It was somewhere in there. And they had a very long drive to finish with a field goal with 3 minutes left. And when the Steelers then got the ball back, they surrendered. They ran the football. They had no interest in really trying to play it out at that point. So a great finish to the game with that 6 minute drive. The offensive line deserves quite a bit of that credit. Okay, go take a drink. It's one of the nice things. I get to hit the mute button. I get to take a drink when other people are on the show, but otherwise I have to excuse myself. All right, we're back. Let's talk about a few skill position players and some of the players who made it work for the Ravens in this one. I want to talk about Justice Hill first, because his injury was very scary to watch at the stadium. He was basically flipped over, lying on the sidelines. My initial thought was, based on the spot of the hit, that it might have been a leg injury, a knee injury perhaps. But then when he didn't move and everybody is waving frantically for the medical staff, it became clear this was some sort of a head or neck injury. Looked very scary going down. I'm sure you saw it on TV, and couldn't be happier that Hill was able to get up on his own after they worked on him a little bit and revived him. That was very good to see. So anyway, Hill, big play on that thing, big contributor to this game, and a big contributor to the Ravens' season so far. He's played probably 40 or 45% of the total running back snaps for the year. He's been a guy they've depended on as a pass blocker. He's been a guy, when they have set him up to be a receiver who's been very good and they still use him a lot as a chip blocker, which I think really reduces his impact as a receiver. But when he's been set up to be a receiver, he's been an unbelievable threat for this Ravens team. He's run the ball fairly effectively when he's been asked to do that. And this is a really unfortunate loss. Talked a little bit with Q in the first show about how the Ravens will attack that in this coming game against the Texans. I think actually we're going to see Henry play a slightly increased percentage of the snaps, but not a massively increased percentage. So I think we might see between 60 and 70% of Henry in this game. If you talk about a 60 snap game, which is a little bit lower than average, but maybe normal for a Ravens team that really likes to shorten games, that means there's about 42 snaps up to that. But it might be, between 36 and 42, well, let's call it 39 snaps are taken up by Derrick Henry. Then you have 21 snaps to fill. If I had to fill those 21 snaps, I'd say something like Ali will get 16 or 17 and Keaton Mitchell will get 4 or 5. And there may actually be some overlap where Keaton Mitchell is on the field as a second running back and split wide to use for some misdirection components. But I think we'll see the filler back. And when I say that, I mean when the Ravens are not in position where they're caught up with the sticks appropriately, meaning they're not in a high run probability down, I think that we'll see a lot of Ali. And I think we'll see probably some limited amount of Keaton Mitchell, but I also have this feeling that we're not going to see a 15 snap gain from Keaton Mitchell here. I don't see that as the likely outcome, even though I know Ravens fans would probably rather see Mitchell than Ali. I share that view as well, by the way. I want to really see where Mitchell is. It's a good game to bring him back because they've got 10 days immediately after where he can rest, and actually 11, I guess, before they play that last game against the Browns. And unless Hill can return for that game against the Browns, which I think is likely, just not knowing, but generally 2 weeks is enough to recover from a concussion. There may be complicating factors, and I don't want to minimize in any way what Justice Hill is going through right now. But if he can't play in that final game, there'll be at least enough rest that Keaton Mitchell should be able to come back and be fresh to play again. And I think we should probably be at a point where anything we get from Keaton Mitchell this year is gravy. We certainly haven't gotten anything in terms of even a single touch to date. So whatever happens either now or in the playoffs is gravy. We also thought this would be about the time he'd be returning before the season. Remember what our expectations were? He wasn't going to play at least half the season. Whatever he would do in terms of playing time would be ramped up, and then maybe you get a few carries towards the end of the season in the playoffs. I think we're now, whatever we get's a bonus. I just hope that if there are scar tissue issues, and by the way, Q had some excellent thoughts on this in the first episode, whether it's quick twitch musculature, muscular skeletal conditions, or it is an inability to maintain high speed for a long period of time, whichever is the really significant problems, if not both, that they can be fixed, including minor corrective arthroscopic surgeries to clean up scar tissue, for example, can be done before next season, because Ravens need him back in a big way. Next year, Derrick Henry may or may not be quite as good as he is this year. You know, hopefully he will be. Hopefully the Lamar Jackson effect is still there in terms of making him an outstanding runner. But I think, you know, we've got to prepare for a year where they get something out of another running back. Hill will be back, but Mitchell also, I think, is an important piece of this Ravens three-headed monster. All right. Talk about Rashad Bateman maybe a little bit, because you know, maybe people didn't notice, but he was on the injury report this week. There were some real questions as to whether he would play or not, listed as questionable, sat out of practices. But then he came back, listed as in a boot, by the way, during the week. You always love to hear that about your wide receivers. But then he came back and he played pretty well, I thought. Did catch the one touchdown pass. He and Lamar were on a little bit of a different page on Lamar's interception, which was unfortunate, but Bateman sat down as if it were a zone play, and Lamar obviously read it differently and threw the ball to the outside where Minkah Fitzpatrick was able to collect it for that first interception of the year that wasn't first touched by a Ravens receiver. Got a good game from Mark Andrews. He certainly made some big plays. Lamar really understands how to space a ball away from a defender, put it where Andrews can go get it. And he did that on the left sideline on that 16-yard play. And then Andrews helped Lamar probably even more by sitting down in exactly the vacant spot that Lamar could zip the ball through to him in the end zone to finish that drive, which I think it was about six plays for 60 yards. If you want to get an idea of how impressive that drive was, look at the Pittsburgh Steelers forums, and they're talking about hot knife meat butter. And then somebody else says butter put up more resistance and whatnot. I mean, they're distraught about their defense and what they provided on that series at a key moment in the game that put the Ravens back up seven, I believe, after the Steelers had just scored 10 consecutive points to get the game tied. The Ravens ended up scoring the last 17 after that, starting with the what I'll call the Andrews drive. Who else we got to talk about here? Patrick Ricard, not a big game in terms of snaps, 19 snaps. Probably his biggest play was getting wide the hell open. I mean, there was nobody else on the left side of the football field on the interception intended for Bateman. So Lamar obviously couldn't have seen Ricard, couldn't have seen him breaking open because he went into the wide open spaces over there. It would just have been a matter of how long did it take the ball get to him to see if that could have been a touchdown or Ricard would have gone down somewhere inside the 10-yard line. But it would have been a big gain, easy first down, probably a touchdown. And as you know, one player going over to tackle Ricard is often not going to be enough. So that would have been an interesting play to see him rumble home if that could have happened. He's doing a good job in terms of blocking. Ricard, they ask a lot more of in terms of difficult blocking assignments. He's played a lot more as an inline tight end, particularly in Kohler's absence, than as a fullback and really kind of dancing up and finding a blocker in the way he can be most effective, I think. But when he's on the end of the line of scrimmage, he's also valuable to the Ravens, both as a pass blocker or a run blocker, and that's where they need him. It's, again, another case of we talked about the defensive line where Broderick Washington would do better if he didn't have to play nose tackle. He'd do better at the 3 and 5 spots. This is another case where I think Ricard would do better at the fullback spot, but it also requires that you have Kohler available to take that inline role where he'd been doing very well during the year. And also then you get Andrews out of that inline role as well. All right, Isaiah Likely. All right, nice game for Isaiah in a few different ways. He did the best he could as a blocker, which I think we've just got to take. There are some limitations when he has to block in line that are just not going to be exactly to our liking. But did a good job. I thought he was used a couple times as a pass blocker. And that was just as a set blocker. He was used also 3 times as a chip blocker and definitely had some significant help he provided there. As always, he's a pretty darn good run blocker. And there are limitations when the closer you place him to the line of, or to the end of the line of scrimmage. But if you put him flexed in a place where he can make a level 2 block against a smaller man, it's a big advantage. So I think we talked about that a little earlier in this show, so I won't belabor it. We did see a few snaps from Walker, who was out there for, I think it might have been 11 total snaps, might have been 9. I know I've got that here somewhere. Had 9 snaps in this game. Didn't get a pass. I kept going on the phone for it with Maureen and saying that, Walker's in, he's on this side of the field. Looks like they're trying to set up a long play to him, but Lamar never went to him in this game. That was kind of unfortunate. I'd like to see him, stack a game where he gets, another opportunity, at least at a target, maybe shows some ability to do something with the cornerback, even if he doesn't catch the football. But Walker needs to get in there more, and the Ravens, I think, are going to need him through their run to the Super Bowl as far as that goes. So hopefully he'll be back on the field for a little more. Who else do I want to talk about? Derrick Henry. It's really hard to limit the superlatives in this game for Derrick Henry, because he had a terrific game. If I'm going to start, what I thought is his most impressive individual numbers, he had 7 rushes of 10 or more yards in this game, which was his highest of the season. I think he had never had more than 5 in any other game. And, you know, given the kind of year he's had, it's been a lot of some really big breakaways. And then I laughed a little bit when I saw Brian Baldinger talking about his 44-yard run, which was a great play. The Steelers overreacted to Lamar at the mesh point. You hear me say it almost every week that the Lamar Henry mesh point is the most powerful weapon offensively in the game. That proved it in this game. The left edge defender chased Lamar downhill after the mesh point, and Henry used that opening to run for 44 yards, and it was a great play. Baldinger thought that set up the touchdown. In fact, the interception was the next play, which was unfortunate, but the Ravens got it back with a pick six of their own just 2 plays later, and that reversed the game in a sequence of plays. Those 5 plays where they scored as the fourth quarter began, and that might have been the touchdown pass to Andrews. I got to go back and look at this here, but I believe Q4, 15 minutes. No, that wasn't it. It was the 4th and 6 play was the beginning of Q4, first play of Q4. And the Ravens had a great defensive play there, get back, covering Austin, and Hamilton got his hands up and knocked the football down. Probably should have had a pick, but it probably might have ended up being more like a punt if he had. So good to knock the ball down and get the ball at the 45-yard line. Then they had the run for 44 yards. Jackson threw the interception to Fitzpatrick when Bateman stopped on the route, correctly or incorrectly. Whoever was wrong doesn't really matter, but Fitzpatrick ends up with the ball in his hands, returns at 25 yards. Steelers start out at their own 33. They run for 3 yards, and then Wilson gets undercut by Humphrey. Pruitt, the receiver, gets undercut, but Wilson throws the pass that Humphrey grabs with the pressure by Ajabo playing a significant role in that one. So that 5 play sequence, which include 2 get off the field plays by the Ravens defense and 1 by the Steelers, plus the Ravens score, really put the game all but away at 31-17 at that point. The Ravens next got the ball. They had that six minute a drive from their own 8 to the Pittsburgh 6 that ended up with a Justin Tucker field goal. By the way, as much as I'm a guy who wants to go for it on 4th and 1, going up by 3 scores is more important at that point. So it made a lot of sense that they kicked that field goal. I did think that the Steelers did some relatively stupid things. I mentioned this earlier. With 9:26, they had 4th and 12 at the 50. They decided punting would be the better choice. I don't understand that one at all. They hadn't been able to stop the Ravens offense really pretty much the whole game, or the Ravens run game in particular. I think that's a place where the Steelers probably should have gone for it. And the upside, what they had to gain from that, was a lot more significant, particularly at that point in terms of win probability, because there wasn't really any downside to giving up there as opposed to on the punt. They had there was less difference than there would be normally. Okay, let's move on and talk about a couple of mailbag questions, because we had some interesting things come up here. One of them pertains directly to the MVP vote. I want to talk about this, but Alvindo Royale, longtime listener, really appreciate his great questions when he puts one in. Would you mind respectfully showing Mr. Schatz the game tape from this one and try to explain the effect of Lamar's gravitational pull on a defense and how it puts defenders in peril? The zone reads to Henry and the likely touchdown being perfect examples. Okay, so we talked about some of this already, but Lamar, the mesh point between Lamar and Henry, enormous weapon. I will say Aaron Schatz was the lone dissenter to unanimous MVP by Lamar Jackson last season. I applaud him for coming out and explaining his reasoning for doing so. He thought other quarterbacks had a better year in terms of their throwing, I think in particular would be the way he would describe it. But even maybe in terms of how his system, DVOA, analyzes their individual plays. What I'll say about that is that Lamar Jackson's effect on the Ravens offense is in significant portion hidden by his value in the read option. He's made all the running backs around him better over the years. And you look at Derrick Henry, he's a prime example. 46% success rate in his last 3 years at Tennessee. All of a sudden at age 30, he's having a career year in a lot of rate statistics, including yards per carry and including success rate, where he's at, let me make sure I have this correct here. I think he's about at 57% on the year. That is some rarefied air, by the way, folks. Yeah, he's at 57.6% for the year. The all-time record holder in success rate by a running back was 57.4% coming into this year by Gus Edwards. Not a accident, by the way. Both those guys played with Lamar Jackson to get those kind of success rates. He had a previous high in his career of 56.6% success in his 2,000-yard season where he had 17 touchdowns. That was in 2020 when the Ravens actually handled him in the playoffs very effectively. But the last 3 years since then, his aggregate percentage has only been 46%. So he dropped off substantially. Honestly, that three-year period was one of the reasons I was a little bit lukewarm in terms of his ability to come to Baltimore and being the kind of impact player he has been. But he's exceeded expectations in every way possible in terms of this year. And the success rate that I pegged him for was a good season. And we did in the preseason expectations series, I do a good and a great expectation for each player. And my expectation for a good season, which would have been the 60th percentile, was a 51% success rate. And my expectation for a great season, the 80th percentile, was a 53% success rate. And he's at 57.6. So I think we can say Derrick Henry has had a great season that I would have, if you told me this was the season, or you told me you expected this kind of a season before the year, I probably would have been said that sounds like about 95th or 97th percentile to me. You should expect some decline from this back. The Ravens offensive line has question marks. Yeah, sure, they have some scheme things, and they do have Lamar Jackson. I do expect his success rate to be higher, but I don't think it'll be that much higher. But he's come through in flying colors on this. And it hasn't just been a matter of, you know, yards after contact. They've gotten him great first contact opportunities in level two, but he's had tremendous yards before contact year that has been largely based on his own ability to outrun defenders. So the 87-yard play, for example, against Buffalo, which is still contributing pretty significantly to his overall yards before contact, that play, I don't believe he was touched the entire way down the field. So it's always nice when you can pick up yards before contact, not only because your offensive line is doing you favors, which is kind of the traditional way we think of it, but also because that running back is outrunning defenders, which is what I think Henry has shown us a lot of once given that little bit of daylight to work with. Okay. And the touchdown to Likely, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but tons of misdirection components on that. It was definitely something that looked like a run play and with the kind of heavy personnel the Ravens put out there. And it was a second down play. So not one you necessarily, and second and long, not necessarily, I think on second and nine, not necessarily a play where you expect a run, but they certainly were showing run. The Steelers were fearful enough of it that they totally bit on it. And you see Minka and Patrick Queen looking at each other after the play with Minka kind of scowling, I think, is a good indication that there had been some biting occurred on that shouldn't have. So good play anyway there. And Derrick Henry, if Lamar Jackson should get a 15% commission, let's say, on all rushing yards, and I think that might be too low. I think he actually makes the typical back better than 15% better. Then you probably can also say that Derrick Henry deserves about a 5% commission on all passing yards the team gets when he's in the game, at least, because he definitely provides fear. Coming out of that mesh point that causes defenders to make mistakes. And it's just been a joy to watch this offense been so successful doing this. Reasonable chance, folks, that Todd Monken is going to get given a head coaching role. It's not something the Ravens should necessarily fear. I hope that they'll be able to, I hope one of the things they really try and do is figure out what institutional knowledge they need to be very careful not to lose. So the film is all here. A lot of the players are still here. The offensive line is still here in terms of understanding what's going on. A lot of the assistant coaches will still be here. They don't have Joe D. They didn't have him for this year. They have Warhop. They might not have him for next year. I would anticipate they're going to go out and sign a very the best offensive line coach that they possibly can. So there will be some changes, but hopefully a lot of that institutional knowledge is maintained that allows them to maintain the run concepts originally built by Roman, but also maintain a lot of the passing concepts that Monken put in place the last 2 years. But pretty good chance that Monken will go to the Jets. The one thing working in the Ravens' favor is he's not the kind of guy you hire if you want a head coach for 20 years. He's a temporary Band-Aid. He's a guy who'll be around his new organization for 2 or 3 years. I would not anticipate him lasting for 6. I think he might be 66 years old coming in next year or thereabouts. So he's not a guy I would anticipate being around for a long time in a head coaching role. But he still could go in and revamp an offense for somebody. And the Ravens honestly might need to pony up a few more dollars for him just to keep him here, even if he has an offensive coordinator offer at another with another team. And I think that could be something the Ravens are going to really need to look at for 25 is rebuilding their succession planning for both coordinators and eventually for Harbaugh as well, in terms of having a number of young options that can move up. They lost Anthony Weaver, who was certainly somebody who fell into that category. They lost Mike McDonald, not unexpectedly, who is a potential future head coach for the Ravens and got his job, maybe even earlier than expected, but he got the job. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, I expected it the whole time. It was the last job. The last job that was open went to McDonald after they looked, everybody looked at a lot of other players. McDonald got a great, great thing, and he is a dynasty building head coach. So he was exciting. I think Seattle got a good one. But I think that the Ravens need to rebuild some of that position level coaching and try and see if they can get things corrected. I will say, as the season has moved on, particularly in the secondary, I think we've seen more that it was about the personnel, particularly about the safety position not being particularly well put together. A lot of people were blaming Orr, ready to fire him. Obviously they made changes to bring in Dean Pease and see if he could provide some useful advice without, being a guy who's going to take the role from Orr. But next year, I think they probably will get a new coach for the secondary. Not necessarily, it could be an assistant coach there, but somebody who is going to grow into that role and be a guy who would lead the secondary for some years to come. And we'll see how that plays out. But I do think that's probably one of the places where the Ravens would do well to find, quote unquote, the next Denard Wilson, who's a guy who has a possibility of being an outstanding coach in the future. And they need to do that a few different positions. So it's not just there. All right, well, that's going to do it. Merry Christmas to everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening all year. The response to this show has been absolutely terrific. I kind of wondered at times whether or not putting out 9 pods a week would be a little too much for people, but it doesn't seem like it is. I really appreciate you guys drinking up the content as you do. I've seen some amazing things. There's one of the, might be Spotify, gives you at the year end reporting of how many hours you've spent listening to various pods. If you have an exceptional number and wouldn't mind sharing that with me, I'll read them off on air if you've got it. If you get anybody with a significant record of listening to this show, I want to recognize specifically on air. And I also want to hear from you people. So there's 2 ways you can do that. Number one is through hashtag film study mailbag. Ask your questions, have comments in particular. It doesn't have to be a question. I'm happy to talk through a comment. And then I may respond to it anyway, but I'm not taking it as a question. It's your idea, and you have this thought about things. The other possibility is if you want to be on a film study short, we'll have some opportunities for that coming up after this Wednesday game against the Texans with the longer period. Great time to do some short content. And again, all I really want for that generally is 3 bullet points on topics you'd like to talk about. And we'll have a phone call. I'll talk to you very briefly about what make a good show. You can go back and you can kind of fill it out a little bit for yourself if you want to. But generally speaking, three bullet points and some extemporaneous talk about a topic, particularly one that's a very narrow in definition, is usually all that you need to make a really high quality short content. In fact, the more you do, the more you try and make it into a presentation, oftentimes the less good it is in terms of an interactive conversational thing. So if I had to give you that tip, I'd say try and do that with your short content ideas, and I'll try and make it as good as I can with you, draw on your strengths and really try and make you look good on the show. It's also the way I meet most of the good new people I meet who eventually do offense and defense pods. So if you're out there and you're a great young analyst, or you're a great middle-aged analyst for that matter, I want to meet you and I want to talk football with you and see if we can include you in this large film study lineup of pods that we have. Anyway, thanks again. Merry Christmas, everybody. Have a happy and safe holiday with your families. Enjoy your time off, and we'll see you soon on Film Study.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.